Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 156. I'm recording it on Monday, August 10th, 2009. The P10 level today is 17. That's slightly high. The long-term value proposition of stocks today is not great, but reasonably good. The music for this podcast, the title is Calculate It Move. The title of the podcast, a one-word title, Revolution. I sometimes try to choose musical selections that have a title connected with the podcast. I think it's a nice thing to do, to have them connected with the podcast theme. I don't always take the trouble to do it. Sometimes choose one that is easily available. But sometimes I go to that trouble. And I was looking through some today, and nothing struck me. And then I saw this. This is one I used a long time ago, Calculate It Move. And I wanted to use it because this podcast is called Revolution. And the point here is that what I talk about at the podcast and in the articles at the site is not some small change in our understanding of how stock investing works. Whether I am right or wrong, I will leave to others to decide. I obviously believe I'm right, or I wouldn't say the things I say, but it's certainly fair to say that I'm a flawed human, could be wrong. But if I'm right, I'm not right about some small thing. If I'm right, the ideas we're exploring at PassionSaving.com and in the Retire Early and Indexing discussion board communities change the history of investing in a profound way. They change everything. Change everything we understand about investing. If these ideas are right, I think they're right. I've put them up before smart people and asked them to question them. I'm personally convinced they're right. But right or wrong, I mean, if they're wrong, they don't matter at all. If they're wrong, of course, they're totally lacking in significance, but we're not talking about something of small significance. And the reason the title Calculate It Move rang a bell in my head is that I have known this for years now. I didn't know it when I started. I didn't know it on May 13th, 2002 when I put that fateful post up at Motley Fool. I don't know. Might have been a year or two later when it sort of hit me how big this was. I know that I knew it a long time ago because the title Revolution comes from Rob Arnott. Rob Arnott is the former editor of the Financial Analyst Journal, the most prestigious journal in the field. And Rob Arnott, what would happen is, you know, the way this all started is I discovered the errors in the old school safe withdrawal rate studies. And I posted about that at Motley Fool, and lots of people were excited to learn. Some people very, very, very much did not want people to learn, and they wanted to stop those discussions. And I would have people saying, who were sort of sympathetic to me, they had liked my postings on saving, and they didn't want me to get banned or driven away or attacked. And they'd say, Rob, you know, can you just drop it? And I'd say, no. If I didn't know that the safe withdrawal rate studies are wrong, I could drop it. If I had any uncertainty, I could drop it. And once upon a time, I did have uncertainty before we did the numbers, and I could drop it, but we can't drop the numbers now. Now that we know they're wrong, it changes the history of investing. We have to go forward, or we're not honest people, we're not serious people, we're not caring people. And they say, oh boy, you know. And but then I saw this quote from Rob Arnott, former editor of the Financial Analyst Journal, and Rob Arnott said something to the effect, I don't remember the exact words, but he said, we are in the early days of a revolution in our understanding of how stock investing works. And I just got so excited. I said, oh, Rob Arnott is a straight shooter. This is the first person who has ever said this so clearly. that the question of whether valuations affect long-term returns is not some little change in our understanding of how stock investing works. It is huge. The word revolution means everything changes. Everything. The whole order changes. The whole structure of our model, everything, is up for grabs. And if you look at the titles of some of the podcasts here, you'll see that I believe that. I say stocks are less risky than bonds. That's a dramatic change from the conventional wisdom of many years. I say there are times when money market accounts offer better long-term returns than stocks. I say, you know, passive investing can never work. I mean, all these sorts of things. And, of course, this is the reason we've had so much friction, because those on the other side, I don't think they would necessarily say this is a revolution, but they sense it. They sense it, that this is a big deal. And so that's why they want to stop it. If it was a small deal, they could say, well, you know, let's, you know, I don't agree with Rob, but let's let him have his say. What's, you know, what's it matter? But they sense if they allow this in the door, it's the end. It's the end of the old model. It just everything changes. It's a revolution. So when I was posting on this question, dating all the way back to whatever, I mean, probably 2003, when people would say, drop it, no, I sensed that it was just too big. I did, and over time, I learned it was bigger and bigger. So it was a calculated move. Not that I wanted to be banned or I wanted people to threaten to kill me or any of this, but I literally felt you can't post honestly at any of these boards. Not that you have to be proven right, but you have to say what you believe. You just must. You have to insist on your right to say what you believe. And if others want to believe other things, fine. But you have to say what you believe. And that's what I was banned for at every board I was banned at. It was solely for saying what I believed. I never once put an abusive post. Never once did any site owner say that I put an abusive post. Never once. I was banned at numerous places. I don't know how many. The goons used to exaggerate, and I had been banned at about 3 places, and they used to say 15. And now it really is about 15 when you count the blogs and things. But never once an abusive post. And anyway, the point is, this is big, very, very big. And so it was a calculated move to say, you know, on my part, to say, no, I won't drop this, because I didn't know where it was going to go. I didn't know how it was going to get there. But I said, I've got to figure out where this leads. I'm not just going to drop it because it's so big. And if somebody comes in and shows me I'm wrong, well, I'll just say sorry. You know, that's one way it could end. And the other is, we're just going to keep learning more and more, and we're just going to go forward, and it's never going to stop. And so far, the learning experiences just keep coming. Now, over the weekend, the last couple days, I scribbled down podcast ideas in a notebook. And over the weekend, there were about 3 that I scribbled down. And I noticed they didn't seem long enough at least not for the type of podcast I do. They seemed like maybe 15-minute, 20-minute podcast. But I noticed they had a common theme. And it sort of hit me. Maybe I could do them all 3 together under that common theme. And the common theme is revolution. The 3 concepts I wanted to explore, the 3 themes, are 1, can passive investing ever work? I had a long discussion at the blog this weekend with Artie. Artie is one of our best posters ever. And he's arguing that he doesn't like it when I say passive investing can never work. And I don't know if I can tell you the title of that blog. I think it's the blog entry on, I don't think I can remember it. If you go by the date, you'll find it. Today is, maybe I might be able to look it up as I talk. I think I can do that. Just so I can tell you, in case you want to look at Artie's comments, which would be a good thing to do, a very educational thing to do. It's a recent, it's the blog entry dated August 5th, 2009. The title is Podcast Number 137, 9 Valuation Informed Indexing Portfolio Allocation Strategy. So it's the blog entry in which I announced that podcast, and we have 46 comments filed, and most of them are Artie and me going back and forth. Artie arguing that there are circumstances in which passive investing can be a good idea. Me arguing that's impossible, logically impossible. And neither one of us ever posted abusively. It's an educational exchange, but we both expressed our views strongly, I think it would be fair to say. Artie feels strongly the way he feels, and I feel strongly the way I feel, and I hope we remain friends. I think we do. But it's fascinating to me because many times I'm in these discussions with, you know, what I call goon posters, people who are just, you know, outrageously abusive. The Graney or Lindauer followers. And you can learn from them. You can learn from them. Because every now and then, they'll say things sincerely. They'll mix it in with all the trash. But Artie is a supporter. A big supporter. So when you get a big supporter, you know the guy's being sincere. And it's just baffling that I can explain why passive investing can never work, and it does not persuade Artie, and Artie is not biased against me. That fascinates me. You know, it tells me that I've got to figure that out. Why? You know, why? Could be I'm wrong. I mean, you know, that's an option, but I don't think I'm wrong. So if I'm not wrong, well, why doesn't Artie get it? He's smart. He's educated in this area. He's not biased against me, but he does not agree. That comes through very clearly. So that led me to believe that this question of can passive investing ever work would be a good theme for a podcast or part of a podcast. And another one is, will passive investing come back in the event that we overcome it, which I believe we will in days to come? Will it come back? And that was discussed in an article that John Malden ran, I guess on Saturday morning. His new column comes up, and it quoted Jeremy Grantham saying that he was saying, we'll learn from this experience, this horrible experience with passive investing, but he said, in the short term, we'll learn a lot. In the medium term, maybe a little. And in the long term, nothing. In other words, we're just going to go right back to emotional investing strategies in time and destroy ourselves yet again. We've done it 4 times. Every time we've tried passive investing, we've destroyed all investors who follow it and the entire U.S. economy. We didn't destroy it, but we caused an economic crisis every time. And he's saying, we'll just do it again. You know, 20 years from now, we'll do it again. And that's very disheartening to think, and I don't think that's true, but I have the greatest respect for Jeremy Grantham, so this is another case where a very sincere guy is saying something I don't agree with, and I thought I should take that on. And the third question was one that came up during the discussion with Artie. Who holds the burden of proof in these discussions between passive investors and rational investors? And that's a curious little question that I'd like to address for a few minutes. So those three themes all go under one big theme, which is revolution, that the change from passive to rational is so big that it changes our very understanding of what stock investing is. It's just so big. This is why even people who are sincere can't grasp how big it is. You almost need a new language to begin talking about stock investing rationally. We almost need to develop a new terminology, a new way of thinking. That's how big this change is, from the passive mindset to the rational mindset. So I'm going to try to address those three themes, and hopefully as I address them, it will become clear to at least some of the people listening, or some of you, that this is fundamental. The question of whether valuations affect long-term returns is fundamental. It's very odd because people acknowledge that valuations affect long-term returns. Even passive investors acknowledge this. But if valuations affect long-term returns, Rob Bennett maintains, passive investing is pure and complete nonsense. If you acknowledge that valuations affect long-term returns, and we know that they do. We have academic research showing this, and it dates back 28 years. So we've known for 28 years that passive investing is total, complete nonsense, and yet we go on day by day by day as if it were real. It's sort of as if a scientist had discovered that, there's gravity, or that, human beings learned how to make fire, and people just sort of said, well, let's not do that fire thing. You know, that's new, and let's just stick with, you know, not having fire. You know, it's crazy. If you have fire, you obviously want to use it to improve your life. It allowed people to cook food, and it allowed protection from, you know, predators, and it allowed warmth at night so you could sleep in your cave. and we're going to say not use it. We know that valuations affect long-term returns, which gives us hundreds of investing strategies that were never available to us before, and we're just going to ignore that? It's truly baffling, but it's human. It actually is true. If you go back historically and look at times when great discoveries have been made, that frequently there's a lot of resistance to entering the new era, to giving up what's comfortable and giving up what's tried and true, supposedly, and moving on to something much more exciting and much more life-affirming. So, the first question is, can passive investing ever work? And I'll give some examples. Artie says yes, and he's certainly not the only one, but he's somebody that I, you know, credit as being a sincere, you know, advocate of this position. Although he does not persuade me, I believe that passive investing can never work. The reason I say passive investing can never work is we have to say what passive investing is, and it's not hard, it's easy. Passive investing is the idea that you do not have to change your stock allocation in response to price changes. So if, you know, what followers of passive investing will say is they all acknowledge that your allocation is important, your stock allocation. That the allocation you choose is important to success. And this, I agree. And then what they say is, well, decide what your allocation should be. Look at things like your risk tolerance. And perhaps you decide on a 70% stock allocation. That's your decision. And then what the passives say is, well, stay with that. Stay with 70%. And every now and then rebalance so that you return to 70% if ever your allocation gets out of whack. But the goal is to always stay at 70. Rob Bennett says that's insane. He says that the risk of stocks changes dramatically at different price levels. So if you chose 70% stocks at a time when, well, let's say 60, the numbers work better. If you chose 60% stocks at a time of reasonable valuations, at a time of insanely high valuations like we had from 1996 through 2008, you probably want to be at something like 30%. You certainly don't want to be at 60. You want to cut your allocation in half or more. You don't want to be anywhere near 60, maybe 30 at the highest. And alternatively, when we get to low valuations, when the long-term value proposition is just mouth-wateringly great, you want to be at, say, 90% stocks. If 60 makes sense at an average, you know, a moderate P10 level, then you certainly don't want to be at 60 when the value proposition is so much better, you might want to be at 90. So it makes no sense to stay at one stock allocation. But now Artie agrees that valuations affect long-term returns. He agrees that changing your stock allocation can be a good thing. He does not reject valuation-informed indexing. He thinks valuation-informed indexing is a good idea. But I take it that he feels I'm too dogmatic when I say passive investing can never work, and I do say that. And he's not the only one. Schroeder says this when I post at Goon Central. Schroeder is one of the abusive posters, but occasionally does make good posts. So I'll give the examples. You know, well, I guess what you need to sort of dig into is an example. The example Schroeder gives several times, he's pointed to the Wellington Fund, which is a Vanguard fund. It's been around for some time. And he says, Rob, look at these returns from Wellington. And I don't know exactly. Wellington is sort of a balanced fund. So it's not a high-risk fund. I don't know a whole lot about it. I actually had some money in Wellington, but it was a long time ago. My dad liked Wellington. So, you know, it has a long-term track record in people. It is very balanced. It's not a, you know, I think they go, I don't know what percentage stock allocation, but it's not real high. So, it, they're not going with 90% stock, so they don't suffer as much in crashes. It's a balanced sort of fund, I think. That's how I would describe it. So Schroeder says, look at this, you know, look at this track record for Wellington. Good track record. How can you find fault with that? And he says, I don't know what the return is, but let's just say 9% real over a long time period. So he's saying, you know, this is fantastic. How could you possibly have a problem with this? It's great. Wellington had a lot of, it kept costs low for, Wellington did a lot of things right. And when you do a lot of things right, you tend to have success. So we shouldn't be surprised that Wellington has done well. That doesn't mean that passive investing has done well. It doesn't mean that passive investing contributed to Wellington's success. The way to test that is go back. I think Wellington's been around a long time. I don't know the exact year it started, but I think people quote it going back to like the 1920s or 1930s. It goes a long term, long way back. The way to check whether passive investing is the reason that Wellington worked is look at the results Wellington got and then just compare and say hold everything else stable except change the allocation when prices went to insanely high levels, lower it, and increase the allocation when stocks went to insanely low levels and see whether that increases the return that Wellington got or decreases it. And the answer is it increases it. So why would you say that passive investing was a good thing in this case? Whatever the number is, say it's 9% real that Wellington got, well, and say that, you know, switching to valuation-informed indexing would have brought it up to 10. Isn't 10 better than 9? Why would you say that Wellington worked Wellington did work. Why would you say passive investing worked if passive investing brought down the return? Now, this is madness, in my opinion. This is why I get a little frustrated with it. But what's going on is for psychological reasons, for emotional reasons, people want to be able to say that passive has worked. They're just bound and determined, and they'll grab at anything. So they find one approach to passive investing that produced good results, and then they say passive worked. But they don't bother to check whether it's the passive element that helped it to work, or there are other things going on that helped it to work. And in the case of Wellington, there are other things going on. Wellington gave perfectly nice returns to its investors, but it could have been better. If only it had not been passive, those returns would have been better. And this can be checked. Why don't people check it? And when they check it, why don't they acknowledge? You know, there was a great, great, great post at bogleheads.org not too long ago, about a month ago, and there was a guy who put up a chart showing the correlation between valuations and long-term returns, and the correlation could hardly be stronger. You look at it, and it just knocks your socks off, and somebody came on and said, there's only 70 years of data. You know, maybe that's not enough. And the guy gave the greatest answer. He said, yeah, maybe it's not. But you know what? If I had 5,000 years of data, you still wouldn't accept it. And that's the truth. That's the truth of the matter. The people who argue that passive can work, they come up with all these petty answers, reasons, for disputing a mountain of historical data showing it can never work. And you could present two mountains and they still would dispute it. They don't want to believe that passive can't work. That's all there is to this. Emotionally, they do not want to accept it. No way, no how. And that's it. And we're going to have to acknowledge that and stop pretending that there's some sort of intellectual case that can be made for passive investing, because there isn't. And I don't want to hurt people's feelings. I certainly don't want to be dogmatic. I'm the lead advocate of not being dogmatic in our community. I don't want to be dogmatic, but I want to say what I believe. So the way I try to do it is I say, Artie, you're welcome to post here. You're more than welcome. You're encouraged. If you want to say you think passive's good, please feel free to do so. You're my friend. You're smart. You're a valued community member. You know, you say what you believe, I'll say what I believe, and people can read both sides and decide what they believe. That's the way it should be. But it would be wrong for me to say that I think passive can work, because I am not able to imagine any circumstance in which passive investing could ever work for any investor anywhere on planet Earth. The even stronger statement I sometimes make is that I don't think the rational human mind can imagine a circumstance in which it can work. I don't think it could even work on some other planet, in some other galaxy. I just don't think it can work. The idea that passive investing can work, passive investing means ignoring price. The idea that ignoring the price of something you're going to buy could work, I literally say it's insane. I don't say the people who believe it are insane, because some of the smartest people I know believe it. But I say the idea is insane. The idea. And I say that the reason they believe it has nothing to do with rationality or logic. It has 100% to do with emotion. They want to believe this thing, and so they believe it. And their mind filters out all evidence that it's not so, no matter how strong that evidence is. This is why I say, and of course you have to explain, well, why would this be? Why would people be so emotional? And the answer is, this is a revolution in our understanding of how stock investing works. And human beings are reluctant to engage in revolutions. They don't want to go there. They want to make this all fit the model they have in their head, and you can't make rational investing fit the passive model. They are opposite models. You can't make it fit. Now, Artie has two examples where he says passive investing work, and one of them I'm not going to go into any detail because I haven't looked at it, but it's a Larry Swedrow. Larry Swedrow is a financial planner, and Larry Swedrow posted Bogleheads, and he has something where he where Artie says passive can work, and you can look at Artie's post if you want to know more, but it's a complicated approach, and I don't do complicated stuff at my podcast, so I'm not going to describe it. But it's some approach where you, I don't know what it is, whether you have options or what it is. I don't focus on it because I just don't care. I'll take Artie's word that this approach produced good results. I'm willing to take his word on it. So I don't say it didn't produce good results. But I just don't like the, I mean, the approach might be right for people who take the time to understand it. But it doesn't impress me because, again, the fact that it has produced good results doesn't mean it couldn't produce better results if the passive element were taken out. So it's not a big stock allocation, I don't think. I think this approach calls for something like 40% stocks or something, but I don't want to be quoted because I don't know. Look at what Artie says. But Artie seems to feel that if he can come up with a strategy like this Larry Swedrow strategy that produces good results, that I should say passive works, and I don't buy it. It's the same thing as with the Wellington. There obviously are strategies that include passive that produce good results, but that doesn't show that, in my mind, that doesn't show that passive works because it's not the passive element causing it to work. All kinds of things can work in this world. You know, one of the examples I gave to Artie is I said, what if somebody takes all their retirement money and buys a lottery ticket with it and wins? He's a multimillionaire because he wins the lottery. Does that mean that buying lottery tickets is a good way to finance your retirement? Just because something works in one case doesn't mean it's a good idea. And all that Artie is doing is showing me that, you know, Larry Swedrow was able to come up with some strategy where passive didn't produce bad results. Well, I'm willing to grant that, but I don't give the credit to passive. Swedrow had these different things going on that I don't know, you know, all what they were. But it's these other things going on that are causing it to work, not the passive element. The idea of ignoring price can never be a good thing. Never. And I just try to give examples from ordinary life, and I say, look, if you had a friend who was going to buy a car, and he says, well, I'm thinking of going in without doing any research. I'm not even going to look at price. I just don't care. Would you tell him that's, well, that might be a good idea. There's some cases where that works really well. That can never work. Not looking at the price of something you buy is stupid. It's stupid. Can I be any more plain and blunt? It's stupid. Now, I think this is where we get into friction because, you know, Artie hears that and he says, well, you're saying Larry Swedrow's stupid when you say that. Well, I guess, kind of, sort of. I'm not trying to be rude. I'm not saying Larry Swedrow is stupid on a bumper sticker, but yeah. If Larry Swedrow thinks passive investing is a good idea, I am saying implicitly he's stupid. But I'm not saying he's stupid in that he lacks IQ points. Larry Swedrow has more IQ points than I do. I'm not, and I don't think I'm stupid. I think I'm sort of reasonable in the reasonable level of intelligence. I don't think I'm any genius. I don't think I'm a moron. You know, I'm okay. I'm okay. And Larry Sweetro's more than okay. So I'm not saying he's stupid as a general proposition, but I'm certainly saying that passive investing is stupid. I think passive investing is one of the dumbest ideas ever visited on us here on planet Earth. I think it is profoundly stupid. And the whole trouble is, it started out stupid, but of course people really did believe in it. They had this academic research, and they misinterpreted the research, and they thought that passive investing worked, I believe. They were of good intent. But because they did something stupid, they didn't want to admit it. And so then they, to cover up the initial stupidity, they sort of doubled down on the bad. They became doubly stupid, and then triply stupid, and then quadruply stupid. And at some point, we have to stop the levels of stupidity from multiplying. At some point, we got to say, wait a minute, let's go back to first premises. Does this idea of passive make any sense at all? And if it doesn't, let's throw it overboard. The idea, passive investing means ignoring price. Ignoring price is stupid. And if we weren't talking about stocks, there wouldn't be one person listening to this podcast who would disagree with me. Not one. If I said when you go to buy a car, you should do a little research into what the fair value is before you walk in the showroom. You know, go on Consumer Reports or ask your friends or go on the internet. There's not one person would dispute that. But when I say you should consider the price of stocks before setting your allocation, you know, a war breaks out. That's because people don't want to acknowledge having been stupid. So, I can't help that. I can't help it that Larry Swedro has proposed stupid things, can I? I'm trying to get him to stop doing that. I'm trying to help the guy out. I'm saying, Larry, stop being so stupid. And he just keeps doing it. And he says, oh, it's patronizing. You know, he gets all upset and huffy. Another strategy that Arnie put forward that he says is a case where passive works is something called the permanent portfolio, which was an idea put forward by Harry Brown. And I like the permanent portfolio concept. And the concept is you invest 25% of your money in stocks, 25% in cash, 25% in bonds, and 25% in gold. And Harry Brown says this will cover you in all circumstances. And Artie likes this, and Artie says this works. And he says, you're sticking with 25%, Rob. That's passive, isn't it? And yes, that is passive, yes. But again, why don't we run a test? Artie, I believe, has run a test, and it shows that the permanent portfolio works. I haven't run a test. I like the idea intellectually, but I haven't run any test. Let's just say it works, historically. I don't know that for a fact, but let's just say, for purposes of discussion. Well, great. But does that prove that passive works? What you need to run another test. And the other test would be you have the 25% gold and the 25% bonds, but you change the stock. You go to 50% stock when valuations are low, and you go to 0% stock when valuations are high, and you go to, you know, the reverse with the cash part. And I, you know, what's that going to show? I know what the historical data says. It's going to show that the non-passive approach to the permanent portfolio does better than the passive approach. So once again, is it passive that makes permanent portfolio work? No. What makes permanent portfolio work is that it's effective diversification. Most investors only diversify between stocks and bonds. By bringing in cash and gold, Harry Brown was doing a more effective approach to diversification, I believe, without having studied it. I'm just telling you an off-the-cuff reason why I think that would work well, or might work well. I don't even know that it does work well. I think that's what Artie's saying. There was, I think, a big long thread about it at Bogleheads, and I haven't read the thread. But presuming that it works, and I'm not saying that, I'm presuming it works because of diversification, not because of the passive element. If you look at the passive element, that part doesn't work. So it doesn't prove that passive works. And then another case would be the John Graney story, and I don't want to go into detail here, but John Graney is the owner of the RetireEarlyHomepage.com website, and John Graney's a friend of mine from Motley Fool days, but he's a funny sort of friend. He's a Bob Dylan had a song about he has these friends that spend their life throwing stabbing my picture with a Bowie knife. He says, I got a million friends. Well, I don't need a million friends like John Graney, but I do think of him as a friend because we had a lot of good times together. But once I questioned the numbers in his safe withdrawal rate study, John spent the rest of his life running smear campaigns against me on the internet. But John had great success. I mean, I guess he believes in passive investing. He had great success. And he feels that proves that it works. And lately, he hasn't had so much success. He's lost, he said, well in excess of $1 million recently. But he still feels it works. And I just don't. Now, a point that Graney has made is that his retirement plan is probably not going to go bust. And I agree with that. He's going to lose a lot of money. He was up around $3 million, I think, at one time. He's now down to maybe $1.5 million. And if we have another crash, which I think there's a good chance we will, he'll be down to maybe $800,000. But he can get by on that. He's not married, and he doesn't have a mortgage. And he lives frugally. Doesn't have kids. So I think he can get by on $800,000. But the reason he's going to have that $800,000 is he happened to start investing in stocks at the best time in the history of the United States for doing so. His success isn't because of passive investing. His success is because he was just lucky. He happened to be born at a time that the year in which he accumulated enough assets to start investing in stocks was the best year in the history of the United States for doing so. Well, that's nice. I'm happy for my friend John. But I don't think it's right that he's spread these claims on his website that the safe withdrawal rate for stocks is a constant number and cause, thousands of my fellow community members to suffer busted retirements as a result. I'm happy for John. But that's all. It's just luck. It's just the luck of the draw. Passive investing will work in the sense that there are certain times, if you started investing passively in 1975, you made so much money by 2000 that, stocks could fall an awful big amount and you're still ahead of the game. And that's nice for you if that happens to you. But that's not everybody started investing in stocks in 1975. Some people, God help them, started investing in stocks in January 2000. Where do you think they stand? And where do you think they're going to stand in days ahead if we have another 50% crash, which the historical data says is likely? Passive investing is a horrible, horrible, horrible idea, but that doesn't mean that sometimes people don't get lucky and that when people get lucky, it works. It does work in those circumstances, but that doesn't mean that you can say that passive investing is a good idea. It's sort of like you're succeeding despite yourself. So just because someone invests passively and obtains good results it does not follow that passive investing caused those good results. In the cases in which it happens, people succeed it despite passive investing, is the way to put it. The permanent portfolio succeeds despite the fact that it contains a passive investing element. The Wellington Fund has given good results despite the fact that it calls for passive allocation. John Graney has gotten good results from his investments despite the fact that he believes in passive investing. Stocks are such a great asset class that you can overcome the passive investing penalty, but there's always a penalty. It's never a good idea to ignore price when choosing your stock allocation. So says Rob Bennett. All right. Now, the second question I was going to look at is passive investing, passive/emotional investing going to come back? Passive is emotional. There's no reason to ignore price. Makes zero sense. People do it from time to time. We've done it 4 times in the history of the United States. We've suffered bone-crushing losses each and every time. We've suffered an economic crisis each and every time. We've never had an economic crisis in the United States from 1900 forward, except on the 4 occasions when passive investing became popular. The idea of ignoring price is death to stock investors. It's investing suicide. Stock stock selling industry has spent hundreds of millions of dollars promoting investing suicide over the past 30 years, not intentionally. But they did it all the same. They did it all the same. And I'd like to see them acknowledge it, and I'd like to see them, you know, put in some changes. Time to ring some changes so that we don't do it again. Well, it was a good article at John Malden's site Saturday. His email, he sends out an email, and I'm on the email list. And it quoted Jeremy Grantham, and the question was, are we going to recover? Presumably we're going to recover. Let's hope. And are we going to go back to the emotional / passive approach? Are we basically doomed? Are humans just so messed up? We're going to do this over and over. And Jeremy Grantham, I can understand why he's a little cynical. He's been speaking out against passive investing for years now. And, of course, he's been subjected to all the ridicule that those who talk about rational strategies are subjected to during times when passive becomes popular. These horrible moments in our financial history. And so Jeremy says, well, we're just going to do it again. And the historical record supports him. But I say different, and I'll give you some reasons. But it has to do with this root question of this podcast that this is a revolution, and if it truly is a revolution, that means it's going to be a far-reaching change. And if we have that far-reaching change, we're not going to go back. I don't believe. Some people say history repeats. There's a sense in which history does repeat. But there's also a sense in which history doesn't repeat. And you can look at all kinds of things. You can look at all kinds of things. And history will repeat, and then there will come a change that will fundamentally change things, and then history will not repeat. In other words, human beings do advance over time. There is such a thing as progress. If things always just repeated over and over again, like Groundhog Day, there would be no such thing as progress. And there certainly is reason to be cynical about human nature. We do make the same sorts of mistakes again, and I certainly don't say that we won't come up with new ways to mess up in investing. I think we probably will. But I don't think this idea of passive will necessarily come back. Or at least not with the intensity. Probably never go away entirely. But I don't think it will come back with the intensity. If we solve the problem. If we duck it, I guess it will come back. But the question is, if we duck it, I don't think we'll make it. I don't think the whole economy will come back unless we solve this problem. That's my belief. And I'll try to explain quickly why, and there's just different factors. But one is that the financial hit that we're going to experience this time is going to be so bad that unless we do something dramatic, I don't think we're coming back. Now, why do I say that? Because, as I say, the four times we've gone passive, the average price drop following is 68%. That's a devastating loss. That's the average. That's not the worst case. The worst case is, as you would expect, the time when valuations went the highest, and that was the 1920s. We went to a P10 level of 33, fair values 15, so we went to more than double. That's why we suffered the Great Depression in the 30s. But we barely survived the Great Depression. It was a close call. Well, in the 1990s, we didn't go to 33. We went to 44, far beyond. We didn't go to double fair value, we went to triple fair value. Now, if all you look at is the fact that we did that, you could say we're not going to make it. We're finished. Because the loss, the real loss in stock value we suffered in 29 and the years forward was 80%. It wasn't 68% the average, it was 80%. So that would mean now that we went to 44, the loss this time is going to be 90%. How are we going to survive a 90% loss? The answer, I think, is you go rational And you know, I've got a calculator at my website that shows you if you go rational, you can make up all the money you lost in the crash. Not immediately, over the course of 30 years, because of the added returns you get by investing rationally. Well, what if everybody in the United States knew that? It would change. It would, instead of going under because of our, you know, mistake, greatest mistake ever made in financial history, to go passive, we would all switch to rational, and what would happen? What would happen? For the first time in our lifetimes, we would be investing with confidence, because rational makes sense in great contrast to passive, which makes zero sense. The idea of ignoring price defies common sense. It defies how we invest in, how we buy every other asset we buy in our lifetime. All middle-class investors buy cars and comic books and bananas, and they look at price. And then they buy stocks, and they hold their hands over their eyes. Is it any surprise that we're all intensely emotional about stock investing? I don't think it's a surprise. we're doing something crazy. Of course we're nervous. We're anxious. But what if we stopped investing in this crazy way? What if we started investing rationally and reasonably and prudently and sanely? We would get over all this fear and anger and hate and anxiety. And guess what that would do? It would cause the economy to recover, because it's this fear that we're feeling that's causing the economic crisis. That's why people don't spend money today. So the point is, yes, if you look strictly at the historical data, we're in quite a jam. You know, the hit this time is going to be so bad, we may never recover. But that's a cynical, dark way of looking at it. Why not look at the positive, that we've got the answer this time? We don't just, this is the worst case of passive investing the world has ever suffered. But it was developed at a time when we've had academic research for 30 years showing us how to invest rationally. We can use that. We can use the thousands of insights that have been developed over the last 30 years to recover from passive investing. What if we did that? Then you don't have a 90% stock crash, do you? I don't. If we did that today, if John Bogle and all the others came out today saying, yeah, passive's a loser, here's the way to go, rational, that's the way to go, I don't think there'd be any more stock crash. I don't think the P10 level would go up from where it is. It's already at 17, but I think it would stabilize. And when the P10 level stabilizes, guess what your annual return is? 6% real. 6% real would be a big step up from what we're likely looking at if we don't make this change. So the point is, yes, we appear to be doomed. But there's no law of the universe that says we all have to, like knuckleheads, you know, go over the cliff. We are humans. We have the power. We can change. So I don't agree with Jeremy Grantham, although I have the greatest respect for him. You know, his stuff is wonderful. Check it out. His stuff is wonderful. He's a straight shooter. I have a whole podcast on Jeremy Grantham. But I think he's letting his cynicism get the better of him. He's looking at the dark side, which is understandable, I think, but he's ignoring the bright side. And the bright side is we not only have the disease, we have the medicine for the disease. We have it, you know, it's in a drawer, and we're afraid to open the drawer because we know that if we open that drawer, that means admitting we have a disease, and we don't want to do that. We want to pretend we don't have it. We want to go into self-denial. But if we can work up the courage, if we can show love enough to open up the drawer and take the bottle of medicine and pour it into a spoon and drink it down, we have the medicine to recover from the disease. So the disease doesn't have to kill us. It could be a great thing. We'll look back at this 30-year experiment with insane, you know, passive investing, and we can look back at it as the thing that destroyed the American economic and political system, possibly, Or we can look back at it as the thing that ushered in the rational investing era, the golden age of middle-class investing. That's a choice. That's up to us. And, you know, which way we're going to go, I guess it depends on what you think of your fellow community members. I think they're, in general, a pretty smart group. A pretty kind, loving group. That, you know, has a bit of a tendency to the knuckleheaded as well. So, I don't agree. Now, one reason is we've gotten ourselves, one reason why I don't think we're going to go back to passive is this time the economic crisis is just so serious. Another is, and I want to go through these briefly so I don't run out of time, but another is we're now calling for middle-class investors to finance their own retirements. I don't think you can do that and not allow access to accurate, reasonable investing advice, realistic investing advice. And if we open it up, then passive's finished. Another big factor is something that the Bogle brought in, and not just Bogle, but all these people, Fama, you know, Malkiel, all these people that have promoted passive. Passive is rooted in historical data. I mean, they get all the historical data wrong. They get the analysis wrong because they look at it passively. But the idea of rooting your investing strategies in what the historical data says is genius. Because it's objective. It gets you out of this emotional subjectivity, if done right, if done with analytically valid methodologies. So, that's not going to change. People aren't going to forget. Just because people learn that passive doesn't work, that doesn't mean they're going to throw away the idea of using the data to develop insights. Well, guess what happens if you look at the data in an analytically valid way? The first thing you learn is the most important message of stock investing, that passive can never work. Well, you know, Grantham is suggesting we're going to forget that in 20 years. I don't think we are, because books are going to be written, hundreds of books, I hope, describing what the data really says. And how are we going to forget what hundreds of books teach us? In other words, when we've had these sort of crashes in the past, we didn't have the data. Or at least, you know, maybe some did, but they didn't understand it clearly, or they didn't have as much data, or whatever. They didn't have the tools to manipulate it. Now we have it. And the data makes such a strong case against passive that if we ever get to a point where we're looking at this stuff sanely, we're not going to be able to avoid this message. It hits you in the face like a Mack truck. So I don't think we're going to go back to passive. I have a more optimistic, hopeful take than my friend Jeremy Grantham. The internet allows us to share this and to build websites that are repositories of all the things that work, all the strategies that work. How are you going to overcome that? If people are going to try to persuade us to invest emotionally again in the future, how are they going to overcome the fact that we're going to have these, you know, discussion boards and websites and all this calculators, all this stuff that shows people how to invest effectively? How are they going to overcome it? Once people get to love the idea of investing rationally, they're not going to go back. Why would they go back? You see, passive / emotional investing, it's a loop. It self-feeds. The more emotional you get. Every day, the passive model causes you to get more emotional because the stock market never acts in accord with how passive say it should act. So every day, they get more and more and more anxious. And as they get anxious, they say, oh, I need to be more passive. You know, it's all just a crazy chain of insanity. Rational is just the opposite. When you invest rationally, the market always acts the way you expected it would, at least within reason. And so every day you get more confident. This is the secret to long-term success. When you start investing rationally, you're going to be unsteady on your feet because you're not going to be sure about it. You're going to say, well, you know, it sounds good, but I don't know. But then 5 years later, you're going to say, yeah, this not only sounds good, it does work. And the historical data backs it up. And all the smartest people. And then 10 years later, even more so. Your convictions get stronger and stronger and stronger over time. Why? Because the convictions make sense. You're not trying to persuade yourself to ignore price, which cannot be done if you're sane. You can't persuade a sane person to think price doesn't matter. You're trying to persuade yourself that price does matter if you're a rational investor. And of course it does. And so, why would a person who has developed great confidence in his investing strategies throw them all away and become passive, you know, 15 years from now, 20 years from now? Why? If you open the door to rational investing ideas, they're going to flood in. And we're never going to go back, says Rob Bennett. I don't know the future. I'm speculating based on what I know as a result of the first 7 years of the great safe withdrawal rate debate. Something I would compare this to is Freud, psychologist. I remember reading a quote somewhere, I have no idea where somebody talked about Freud and he said, you know, Freud was kind of embarrassing, the things he said, because what Freud really was telling people, you know, Freud and all that followed, the psychological insights. You know, they talk about things like projection and all kinds of things. I don't know. But all that, what Freud said is, you know, ultimately, that we don't always know our own minds. In other words, we engage in, we don't only try to deceive others, we deceive ourselves. You know, if you didn't understand psychology, you might say, well, everybody's, you know, trying to get the best for themselves, and sometimes they engage in deception of others to do that. But Freud goes a big step beyond that. He says, we deceive ourselves. We don't only hurt others, we hurt ourselves. We are irrational creatures, is what he's saying. Freud doesn't deny rationality. But he says humans are capable of great irrationality. And they are. He's, of course, right. And that's sort of an embarrassing thing to acknowledge, because we like to think of ourselves as having it all together, which would mean you wouldn't engage in self-defeating behavior. But if you've studied Freud at all, and I haven't studied Freud in any great depth, but a little bit, I've read a couple of his books. If you become aware of these concepts, and they're everywhere in the culture today. If you become aware of these concepts, you can no longer believe that humans are, you know, have it totally together. They just don't. It's just false. Well, in the investing realm, it's as if Freud never existed. You know, in the investing realm, it's all charts and tables, and, you know, the market's 100% rational. The market always gets the price right, totally efficient, blah, 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 blee, blee, blee. All nonsense. Can't look at valuations, because valuations are due to emotions, and emotions are those things that make us nervous and anxious, and we don't want to talk about that, even if it causes our investing results always to be poor. If we go the rational route, what we're doing is we're acknowledging, we're being, the thing we're being rational about is our irrationality. We're saying, instead of denying our irrationality, which is what the passives do by denying valuations, we're accepting that we are emotional creatures. We're accepting that, which means you don't calculate the numbers wrong anymore. Once you accept that you're emotional, that we all are, you feel free to calculate the numbers properly. You're not living in self-denial anymore. So, you know, you can't learn these things that Freud teaches and all the other psychologists teach and then pretend from that point forward. You know, you can't write a stick man novel where everybody just behaves rationally after that. Everybody's going to say that's pathetic. Well, it's equally pathetic to say, oh, if you invest passively, you will get 6.5%. You know, it's a cartoon description of how investing works to say that passive could ever work. Stocks for the long run, buy and hold, whoa. You know, come on. It cannot be. And once you let these ideas in, you can no longer deny this. It becomes sad and pathetic. And so I don't think we're going to go back to passive. And again, the point being underlined there is this change from passive to rational is so big. It's like crossing an ocean. And once we cross, we're not going to want to cross back. It would be just as hard to cross back as it is now to cross. And so what we're talking about is a revolution in our thinking. It's not a change in one element of the equation. Now, the third theme of the podcast is who holds the burden of proof. And as I say, I discussed this with Artie. And this is the test. See, this is, I have something I used to call it the debate about having a debate. And it used to annoy me. It still annoys me, but the idea would be, you know, I started talking about the retirement studies, the errors in the old school retirement studies. And I said, we ought to correct these. And the granny people, the goons, would say, they never discuss the issue. Because everybody, you know, you could look up the numbers. And obviously the numbers are nowhere close to being right in the retirement studies. So they didn't want to discuss that. So they changed the discussion to, should Rob be allowed to discuss what the numbers really say? They turned it into a debate about having a debate. And that debate they could win, because they could say, well, you know, we're going to kill anybody who posts honestly, or, you know, we're going to run massive smear campaigns. In other words, we're going to make the penalty for posting honestly so great that no one's ever going to want to do it at any board where, you know, we control the debate. And as long as passive investing remains the dominant model, they control it everywhere. Or they can. So you're not going to have this discussion. It becomes a debate about having a debate. Well, what's really going on there is a burden of proof question. And this is what Artie brought up. And I think what Artie was saying is, I don't want to say for sure, because I don't want to, he didn't exactly say this, but this is how I interpreted what he said. So, you know, read the comments yourself if you want to really check if that's so. What I heard him to say is, what I think he was saying or getting at is, I think he was saying passive investing is the dominant model. So you, Rob, have the burden of proof. If you're going to challenge passive, you need to prove. You have to overcome this burden. And I see it just the opposite. I see it just the opposite. My view is common sense says that valuations affect long-term returns. Common sense says that passive investing makes zero sense. Passive investing cannot work. So if you're going to put forward this preposterous idea that passive investing can work, the burden of proof is on you. Now, I admit that the reality is a strange one. The reality is, I don't know what percentage of investors believe passive can work, but I think it'd be fair to say it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 90%. So we have this strange phenomenon where 90% believe the thing that makes no sense. So that is a quirk. You know, I'll give you that one. But the problem is I can't meet the burden of proof, because how am I supposed to prove that passive is wrong when no one's ever put forward an argument why it should work? What, you have nothing to even argue with. No one has ever put forward a rational argument for why how passive investing could work. Never. This has never happened. No one has ever cited any historical data showing that passive investing can work. Never. So what am I supposed to do? How am I going to carry the burden of proof when there's nothing to argue with? There's never been a case made for passive. How can I argue against it when there's nothing there? Passive investing is a ghost. And they're saying you've got to prove that the ghost doesn't exist. How can you prove a ghost doesn't exist? You can't even see a ghost. I'm going to say, the ghost doesn't exist because now we don't see him? We never saw him. I don't even know that a ghost was ever here. How can I prove he's not here? If you can't prove he's here, you can't prove he's not here. You can't prove passive investing. Passive investing was a mistake. Not, you know, it's not a theory, it's not an idea, it's not an argument, it's a mistake. What happened is, historically, what happened is, there were some smart people, academics, who noticed that using intelligence to invest did not help. In other words, you could go to a very smart person and say, what do you think the market's going to do this year? And he could say, oh, it's going to go down. I'm sure of it. I just know it. And somebody else could say, oh, it's going to go up. I'm sure of it. I know it. And the level of intelligence of the person making the comment makes no difference, or the level of experience they have with stocks. nothing matters. And they were trying to explain that phenomenon, and they said, we've got to come up with a theory to explain this. This is quite the phenomenon. And the theory they came up with is, well, they said, well, what if the market were efficient? Wouldn't that explain it? What if the market price were always right? There'd be no way for a smart person to get an edge. Intelligence would be pointless. So, therefore, the market is efficient, and therefore we should all invest passively because you can't get an edge. Intelligence won't help you, so doing research is a waste of time. Changing your stock allocation because you think you know something the market doesn't know is idiotic. You can never know anything the market doesn't know. The market knows it all. Everything follows. That's passive investing, and it all follows logically. The trouble is the mistake. The reason these smart people can't beat the market isn't that the market's efficient. It's that the market is so wildly inefficient. It's the opposite of what they thought. They think the reason you can't beat the market is the market prices everything in and the price is always perfect. And the real reason you can't beat the market in the short term is the market is so bonkers nutso that no matter how smart you are, you can't gain an edge. It's like it's dealing with insanity. The market was priced at 3x fair value in January 2000. How are you going to beat that? No rational person could beat that because you have no way of knowing whether the craziness that made it go to 3x is going to make it go to 4x. You just can't know. Or 2x or whatever. There's no way to know anything. But that's only true in the short term. It's not true in the long term. In the long term, prices always return to fair value. So what we've got when we've got the stock market is something that is bonkers in the short term, totally unpredictable, cannot be beaten, not because it's efficient, because it's the opposite of efficient, but in the long term can absolutely be beaten. When the stock market is at crazy values, in the long term, sure you can beat it. You just invest rationally in an irrational market and you're going to be way ahead. You'll retire 5 years sooner. That's rational investing. That's the whole idea. It only works in the long term, does not work in the short term. Never let it be said that I said rational investing works in the short term. Never. It works in the long term. You've got to be willing to wait 5 years, sometimes 10 years. But it won't work in 1 year, 6 months. It won't work in 2 years. 5 years, maybe 10 years. So they made a mistake. And so all passive investing is a mistake. It's just layers and layers and layers and layers of rationalization on top of a mistake. It's all wrong. But I can't disprove a mistake. You know, it's like, I think an example I gave to somebody was, if I ask you what 2 plus 2 is, and you say 22, I could say you're wrong. Because you don't understand what it means to add two numbers together. It doesn't mean to place them together and turn it into 22. It means to take the quantity 2 and add a quantity of 2 to it and you get 4. 22 is an incorrect answer. It's wrong. But if somebody said prove it, how can you prove it? There's nothing there. It's just a mistake. The way you prove it is you point out that it's a mistake. You point out that they didn't know what they were doing. Well, that's the case with Eugene Fama. He might be a very nice fellow. I have every reason in the world to believe so, and he's obviously a very smart fellow. But he sure did make a doozy of a mistake, didn't he, when he claimed that the market was efficient. Same thing with Burton Malkiel. Same thing with John Bogle. Same thing with lots and lots and lots of others. So it's a mistake. So the revolution is acknowledging the mistake. When people like John Bogle work up the courage and love to say the three magic words, I was wrong, the mistake's finished. There is no more mistake. And the flood of good investing ideas replaces the flood of ugliness that we've seen in the first 7 years of our discussions in the Retire Early and Indexing discussion board communities. Now we're rational. Now we're rational, and we're never going to go back. Why would anyone go from rational to passive? There's a reason to go from passive to rational. There's no reason to go from rational back to passive. That would not make sense. That would not be appealing to a human. So we have embarked on a revolution. And there's two ways of looking at it. You can look at it as a bad thing. You can say, oh, it's a revolution Rob's talking about. That I don't want a revolution. That would mean changing things. I don't, you'd have to rewrite textbooks and redo calculators. Holy moly. Mel Lindau would have to say he was wrong. Oh, forget it, Rob. Go away, Rob. Go away. Yeah, go away. Disruptive. Go away. Ban you. That's one way to look at it, the stupid way, to recall a phrase. But the other way is to look at it as this wonderful opportunity. There's not one person alive who doesn't benefit from making the change from passive to rational. And there's not one investing strategy, I don't think, that you can't improve by applying a rational analysis to it. Because during the 30 years when passive has been promoted, and passive has its roots 20 years before that even, at the academic community, we've allowed passive to ruin everything. It's poisoned just about everything there is. But if you, that means, you know, that's bad. Yes, it is bad. It's poisoned everything. But the good side of that story is take the poison away, and the patient's going to feel better than he's ever felt for his whole life. I remember, I need to wrap up, but I remember I had a back surgery a long time ago, 25 years probably, and 20 years anyway. But one day, I tried different things. I had it for about 18 months, and I tried different things. And one day, I got one of these shots. They shoot you with something, and the shots help, but only temporarily. But I'd been in pain, and I couldn't sleep at night. And I had to walk. When I walked, it would be less. But otherwise, I'd be in pain. I couldn't sit down. And this guy gave me this shot, and I came home, and I was like, hey, this feels so good. You know, all I was having was the feeling we all have every day, you know, just walking. I said, this feels so good. It's like being in heaven. Well, that's what it's going to be like when we leave passive investing behind. None of us, those of us who have not yet realized how screwed up passive investing is, have no idea of the thrill awaiting you when you give it up. Because when you give it up, it's like the back pain has gone. And it just feels so good to be able to think clearly and talk clearly and not be angry when you're talking about investing and not screw up your portfolio, your retirement. It's all good. There is no downside. But I guess the downside is you have to take the shot. You have to say the three magic words. There's no getting around that one. You got to do it. But once you do it, it's over. So the fact that we are talking about a revolution, we're not talking about a small change. But when you let the revolution in, it's just all good. It's all wonderful. For as long as we deny the revolution, yeah, we suffer. We're at the risk of taking the U.S. economic system over a cliff. And I believe there are signs that we're at risk of taking the U.S. political system over a cliff. You know, we're seeing it with this healthcare debate. Maybe I'll have to explore that in the podcast. I don't know. I don't know if I want to go there, but it's dark. People are starting to doubt their government. Not just doubt the investing advice, the horrible investing advice they've been getting for 30 years. They're starting to doubt the U.S. I mean, they're doubting the lawmakers. That's the U.S. government. I think we better stop fooling around. I think we better get serious about this economic crisis. Getting serious means looking at the cause of the crisis, which is the widespread promotion of passive investing by the stock selling industry over the past 30 years. And I think we better address the problem. And when we do, boy, are we going to feel good. Rob Bennett's take it or leave it. That's what I believe. If you have thoughts, I hope you'll send me an email. Go to the contact Rob button at the left side of every page of the website. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.